We've been talking about problems with Arizona's Child Protective Services system, but why is CPS so necessary? Why are so many kids being abused or mistreated by parents, the ones who are supposed to raise and protect them? I'm joined now by child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. Shane Tomasato of Desert Horizon Psychiatric Services and the Maricopa Integrated Health System. Shane, good morning. Thanks for taking the time today.
Good morning.
Can I get your quick thoughts about the number of cases related to Child Protective Services? Does it shock you that there are so many cases, not uninvestigated cases, just the number of cases generally?
No, it's not. It doesn't surprise me. Child abuse and neglect is a big problem in our society. And in fact, most cases nationwide of child maltreatment do not actually come to the attention of the police or Child Protective Services. So it is a very huge problem.
I guess we can't lump these all in together. Does that have to do with this idea of wanting to stay close to a family, not feeling comfortable reporting it? Are there certain factors involved there?
Well, it may be that it's not even seen by people, that it's a secret and something that is not immediately visible, and so people don't know to report it.
Is there, in fact, a continuing cycle of abuse that we often hear about, this idea that if one generation has been abused, it's more likely the next generation will continue that?
Well, being abused in the past is a risk factor to going on to abuse your own children. In fact, about a third of individuals who've been maltreated will go on to maltreat their child in some way. And maltreatment encompasses physical abuse, neglect, sexual abuse, and so on. But that means that two-thirds of people who've been maltreated do not go on to abuse their own children.
Well, are there certain signs that make those people, able to overcome it more? Do they seek therapy and they're able to overcome it that way?
Well, that is difficult to say, but there is some evidence that having emotionally supportive relationships in both your adult life and your childhood can be somewhat protective in you not going on to abuse your own children. For example, if a child is abused by one caretaker but has really good relationships outside of the home or relatives with whom they have good relationships, that can be helpful. Also, if in their adult life they have very emotional supportive relationships, that can be helpful.
Can you tell us about some of the methods that you've come across that you've used yourself to help kids who've been in situations like this?
Well, after abuse has occurred, there's different things that can happen. If it's determined that a child is still safe in the home and can remain there, then mental health professionals can provide certain types of treatment. One thing they can do is provide parent training in how to influence the child's behavior through positive reinforcement rather than physical discipline, because part of the problem is that physical abuse can occur as a reaction to the child's behavior. So changing the way the parent responds to that behavior is very important. Another thing professionals can provide is something called parent-child interaction therapy. And this is where professionals work with parents and children together and basically coach the parents in specific skills. So in providing these services, what you really want to be promoting is safe, stable, and nurturing relationships between the parent and child.
How often, if ever, is there a socioeconomic connection? Are there people just as likely in high-income situations as low-income situations to abuse?
Abuse and maltreatment can cross all income groups. But that being said, poverty is a risk factor for child maltreatment, substance abusing parents, domestic violence in the home, low parental educational level, housing stress, those are all risk factors for abuse and neglect. So obviously services that address those, such as substance abuse services, domestic violence services, are very critical to helping break the cycle of abuse.
So are we more likely to see those situations? We just came out of a deep, deep recession. Were there signs that there were more and worse situations because of that?
Well, some people wondered about that and expected that, but the statistics are actually pretty confusing, so it's hard for me to answer that.
Okay. It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix, talking with child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. Shane Tomasato of Desert Horizon Psychiatric Services and the Maricopa Integrated Health System. Shane, I don't know if you can address this, but in Arizona, probably in most other states, there's this feeling of trying to keep families together as much as possible, even after abusive situations. What are the pros and cons to that from your perspective?
Well, of course, the cons are, is what if the child is really not safe in that environment? And it is very difficult to assess and make sure that there's absolutely no risk to the child's safety. So that would be the con of the child remaining in the home. Mm-hmm. The pros to it is that often children do have attachments to their parents, even though the parents may have been neglectful or abusive, and then that attachment is disrupted if they are moved to, say, a shelter or foster care. So when CPS deals with all of these issues, they have to try and balance all of those factors and really act in the best interests of the child.
Does a child ever feel safe telling another parent if the boyfriend, girlfriend, stepdad, stepmother is doing something?
Well, they sometimes do feel safe, and of course it helps if they have a good relationship with that parent or another caregiver, and they feel like that they will be supported if they reveal that information.
Okay. How important is the foster care system to this whole process?
Well, it's actually very, very important. The foster parents provide a great service to the kids of Arizona. It's much better than going to an institution, whereas, you know, decades ago, kids might be sent to orphanages or institutions when their parents couldn't care for them. It's much better to be in a family environment and to receive nurturing and get an idea and feeling for what good relationships are. And, of course, the foster care system in itself does have its own struggles as well, and in terms of maintaining quality and numbers of foster parents, it's always a challenge.
And Dr. Tomasato, I know you work with kids and adolescents, but I would ask another question about adults. How does one measure whether an abuser should get jail time, whether an abuser is someone who could be helped to change his or her ways?
Well, that would really, I think, need a case-by-case examination. For example, let's say that you had a single mother who was a very low income and had a really difficult time managing her children because she needed to also be at work and she didn't have caregivers and these children were neglected. Perhaps that is a case where just putting social supports in place, providing daycare, providing respite, providing mental health assistance, all of that can make a big difference. Whereas if you had another person who, let's say, was just in and out of the home and had was intermittently abusive to the child, and there did not seem to be all of these other extenuating factors, they just seemed, let's say, to be a dangerous person, then that is somebody who, of course, you would treat differently in the system.
Dr. Shane Tomasato is a child and adolescent psychiatrist for Desert Horizon Psychiatric Services and the Maricopa Integrated Health System. Shane, thanks for the time today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.